NZ On Air Music presents Long Player.
Kia ora, everybody. Welcome to Long Player. My name is Paddy. I'm here with Jess, aka Fables, to talk about their brand new album, Change is a Slow Moving Beast. Jess, could you tell us a little bit about yourself as an artist for those who might not be familiar?
Yes. I think you'd peg us as a folk band traditionally, and over the last 10 years we've slowly sort of departed what you would call folk music, but at its heart is still folk music. I actually started Fables when I was in high school, so that was 2012 was probably when we started it, and I'm the last remaining member of that cohort, for lack of a better word, and there has been a lot of revolving band members that have come and gone in that time, but the thing that stays true is I often play guitar and I write all the songs and I sing them, and a lot of the time other people sing them with me, so it's quite harmony driven, and yeah, all the instrumentation, it just holds me in place.
So your new album, Change is a Slow Moving Beast, how long has this been in the works?
The oldest song is Someone I Know, which is something that I wrote similar time to when the EP came out, which was 2018. And I just was saving it for the album because I was like, it's just an EP, you know, we're going to DIY everything. And I've got these other songs that feel like they are the title track, or like they are Fables inherently. And then I never recorded them, or I did, but I didn't do them in a way that I felt comfortable releasing. So now we've re-recorded them. So Someone I Know is one that is older, and Minibar is one that is older. And then the rest pretty much came about over the last 3 years. And then the recording process has taken about 2 years. So that's a long way of saying not a lot. It felt like a long time to make. It's quite somber. It's a good album for what I like to call government-mandated floor time, where you just have to lie on the floor, not get too comfy, but relaxed, and then let it play out. It's a good one for driving home in the rain on the motorway. I think the music itself, although it's somber, it should be a pleasure to listen to. So if you have it on the record player while you're cooking dinner and you don't get too deep into the creases, I think that's also a good setting.
How it's meant to be consumed.
Yeah, ingested.
All right. Track number one. Could you introduce this for us, please?
It's called Forgiving, and it's a bit of a play on words because I say all I have is forgiving, and then at the end I say all I have is forgiving. Well, it actually depends which way you listen to it, but I have these kind of two meanings that I interchange throughout the song, and it's kind of like a musical appetizer, for lack of a better word. It's not very long, doesn't really have a refrain of any kind or chorus. And there's this technique in therapy where they talk about the window of tolerance, finding somebody's window of tolerance before you give them some big advice or a revelation. And because if you come in too hot too soon and the window of tolerance isn't right, then they might turn away or not come back, or it could set somebody's journey back a bit. And I feel like this song is just kind of getting a gauge of what our window of tolerance is. It's the entree, a canape.
If time is in essence, what do you extract when I miss the air that I never had, biting down on the easy parts of me, pay the money to the man, take
This song is called Cacophony. This is kind of where we begin delivering the bad news, if you will. I actually heard of the word cacophony and I thought at the time it was the opposite of an epiphany. Like an epiphany is like you have this revelation, this aha moment, and I thought a cacophony was an aha moment, but you've seen a lot of red flags and you go, uh-uh. And then later I found out that I read epiphany wrong and it's euphony. A euphony is a ensemble of delightful, resonant, like joyous, splendiferous sounds. And then a cacophony would be like the opposite of that. That's like yucky and blaring and tense. And so despite finding out that my understanding of the word was wrong, I felt like the vibe was right. Like it was still pretty close. So I kept the name. I struggle spelling it every time I put it on a set list, if I'm honest. So we recorded at Parachute Studios for 5 days, locked in most of it live. Dave Kahn has produced the record with me, and Reb Fountain helped a lot in the pre-production stage. So when we went into the studio, it was me, Cass Basil, Arahi, and Dave Kahn. And Dave plays so many instruments that choosing which one to go where first, for me, felt like a bit of a task, but Dave's done this before. And so a lot of the songs, he would just join us on a mellotron or some kind of drone or something sort of ambient and omnipresent. And then I would just sing and I would play my guitar, and Dave and Arahi and Cass would do the rhythm section. And they just locked in, like they didn't know each other super well before this process, I think, but they had this amazing rapport together. And by the time we finished tracking the album, which is another long story, but I had this moment of thinking, oh my gosh, I know what my band sounds like now. I know what sound I'm trying to write for now, because over the last 10 years, although Fables has existed, I didn't think we really defined a sound that was the kind of music that I see myself reflected in, if that makes sense. So Cacophony, it's really just bass driven. Like if you listen to the bass, it's not super high in the mix, but Cass is doing a masterclass on sort of how to subtly move the song along, create tension and release. And oh, I just think it's so beautiful.
I'm tired of changes, wide open space.
Yeah. ready. This next song is called Eyes Closed. I wrote it because I was in a relationship for a long time where I felt like I could never get the last word in. And so this song has this coda at the end of it that, for me, it feels like I can have my last word, even if the person that I wanted to say it to wasn't listening. That's how it feels. And there's this sort of slow build of tension, and I get my first guitar solo in this song, encouraged by Dave Carney. Was like, why don't you just play something here? And I kind of thought about what I might do, and instead I just played one note through like a yucky pedal, and it slowly kind of disintegrates, and I just left it at that. And we kind of talked about it, and there's these sort of bell-like or resonant crystal sounds that are floaty, and contrasting them with this kind of dirty, earthy, pissy guitar, and then just taking a breath and having the coda after it. So healing for me. Every time I listen to the song, I don't listen to any of the words, I don't listen to a lot, although there's some cool synth moments that I had heaps of fun making, and there's a little bit of glockenspiel, which again, I had lots of fun. It's tastefully in the mix. It's not like, oh, this glockenspiel bangers, good one.
Like the iPhone default ringtone.
Yeah. But I just love getting to the end of the song. It's so rewarding for me, and I hope that it's rewarding for you.
Don't talk to me like I don't.
Moving right along, number four.
Sensitive. This is the first song that we kind of put together as a band that felt like this is the band. Cass has some cool little synthy moments as well. They're kind of sparkly. I see them as little stars that sort of float through the song. And I wrote the song because I'm not very good at faces, and I'm also not great with names, but I'm quite good with like vibes and silhouettes. And I also probably need to get new glasses, but that's another story. I thought that I saw my ex-husband's dead dad across the road. And I kind of, and for that split second, I forgot that he had passed away. And when you split up with someone, you split up with their whole family sometimes. And so at the time that he passed away, I was so focused on holding space for that family and supporting them through their grief. And then by the time, you know, I'd split up, I never really thought about my grief. And so I thought that I saw this person, and I had this rush of like, oh my gosh, I have been meaning to catch up with you for so long. And I nearly like bolted across the road, and then I did a double take, and I just felt this heaviness in my stomach, like this visceral like shit moment. I felt the loss again, but it in full force, because I never really acknowledged it the first time. So I just sat down and I wrote this song about not knowing where to put this grief, because I think grief is meant to be shared. And yeah.
It's a really, really beautiful song. This one's my favourite off the album.
It's my favourite off the album too. I don't know. I think I was too shy to make it a single. I want people to come to this song, and I don't want this song to come to people, really. Or, that's not true. I would like it to come to people, but I feel like it needs to be foraged.
I think it's such an interesting experience that you're writing about in the song. I think it's so relatable to anyone, but I've never heard a song put it into words like that before.
Yeah, I think there is no human experience so niche that nobody knows what you're talking about. And that's why I think I love folk music. And it's not because of the instrumentation and the history, I guess. I think there's a community that comes along with it.
It's the folk.
It's the folk part. And so this song for me feels like a really good folk song.
I've always been sensitive. I'll wear it on my chin. I've always been precious. I'll try to keep the love within. I thought I saw your dad on the way home from work yesterday. I cried when I thought about what we would talk about.
This song is called Enough. It was a single. It made the cut. I wasn't going to release it as a single, but I was encouraged by some very dear people to me. And I felt brave. I felt brave in that moment when I put it out, and I don't feel brave all the time. So, yeah, it's a bit of a doozy. When I play it live, I'm never really sure how to introduce it. So I've just started saying, has anyone been divorced? And there's like two or three like groans from the audience. And then I go, this one's for you. So that here's how it sounds.
You're welcome to leave it at that for this one if you like.
Oh, I can give you some facts about the recording process, actually. That's way easier to talk about. Cass plays a fretless bass, and she actually has double-tracked it in the instrumentals, and she's playing harmonies on fretless bass, and they just sound like, you know when you're crying and you make that H sound before you cry, like the... like, to me, they kind of feel like that. I feel it in my body, her musicality there. And Dave and I are doing almost like a duet in a way that hopefully sounds like one mushy guitar. So he's playing this vintage flat wound baritone guitar, electric guitar, and I'm playing a nylon string in this one. I'm 90% sure I play a nylon string in this one. Again, we've recorded this song so many times. The first time we tried it was way too yee-haw. It got really country, and it just, you couldn't listen to it and feel moved in any direction. Like, it just kind of happened to you, that song. And so we started again and stripped it all back.
Once I made a dream for you, nothing else I'd rather do. Pencils and the paper, I wasn't made like her. You were here. Maybe a ticking time bomb. Did your feet get cold? Did your wife get older? I was there all along. Why did you hold her? Once I made a dream for you, nothing else I heard. Did your feet get cold? Did your wife get older? Take a little time on somebody's shoulder. Then get tired, didn't sleep at night. Been 30 days since I've not cried. And I'm holding out my open hands. I wish I was enough as I am, as I am, as I am. Thank you.
Notebook. This was the hardest one for me to record. We tried it a lot of different angles. It was almost going to be a sort of orchestral string quartet with cello. That's how I wrote it. And then it just wasn't, it was never just landing quite right. And then Dave just took away everything but my vocals and then pretty much produced what you hear. So before I started writing this album, I was walking a lot. I just walked everywhere and I was writing really sad little bits of notes on my phone. And then I was recording samples of things just off my iPhone and cutting little bits together and then making these sort of spoken word videos of like bits that I had seen. Because I didn't really feel like I had the creativity or the accomplishment, I guess, to put what I was feeling into a song yet. It was still brewing because I was finding the words. So in that searching, I kind of found a new medium that was easy to do on the go when you didn't really have a, I don't want to say a house. I had a house, but I didn't have a base. I didn't know where I belonged. So making art when you don't know where you belong is pretty tricky. So that was the medium that I was making. And so I had all these funny little samples on my phone. And so if you listen to Notebook, you can hear some birds and there's some like chatter. And then Dave's like made it play in reverse, you didn't know exactly what we're saying. And then on the vinyl, it's got a locked groove, so the birds just go. They just go and go until you physically take the record off. So Dave pretty much arranged this whole thing, and then the vocals sounded wrong, and so we re-record the vocals to this new track that I was essentially learning a new song, which I've never really done that before. And Emily Wheatcroft Snape recorded this. This was the last thing we tracked on the album. We hit a wall. We went for a swim in GI, came back to the studio and didn't even get dry. Like, we were just still in our togs when we recorded this. And it was, yeah, really freeing and took a lot of the pressure off and it wasn't so serious. And it was just about letting go. So it made sense that we just let go a little bit. And that's what you hear.
Is this how it feels to be full?
Okay, Minibar, it's the first track on the B-side. It kind of feels triumphant to me, even though it's still not super positive, but it feels strong in my opinions.
And what are those opinions?
I feel like if you see bad behaviour and you feel like it's your job to fix it, this was me saying, I don't need to fix this and things will be right in the end. I will get what I deserve, hopefully, and everybody will get what they deserve. And so maybe that person or their behaviour will have to meet me where I'm at. Yeah, that's kind of what the song is about. I don't know how much to say on radio. I write a lot because I don't know how to talk about things. And so I do struggle sometimes figuring out how to meet the conversations with vulnerability, because I think that is important. But also, some things are harder to say, and it's not because I don't want to, it's just like I don't know how to do it best, and that's why I wrote the song.
Take your chances one by one. You've got my world between your thumb and your forefinger. Hold your head high, step by step. I am slowly running out of breath. I don't think I'll be here for long. It's the glass eye and the mini bar and the room service. Did you do this to me? See you again on the downfall. On the downfall. See you again on the downfall. Tie your ends up on your own. It's a cold, hard world when you're on the phone for most of it. Scrape the sheet off.
Someone I know. Fun fact, in the mixing notes that I gave Dan, I said space western. And I feel like there's a three-way conversation between, there's clarinet in there and it's played through some effects. There's a electric guitar and then a pedal steel. And the snare, to me, feels like this big kind of slap. You know that, you know the Spider-Man meme where he's like pointing three ways?
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just like, slap, 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 and it just keeps going around. Everybody gets a turn, like having a telling off. And I feel like if it was to be in a film or a movie or something, it would be like vaguely Western themed, but it would be in space. Mm. Like it's kind of floaty and ungrounded. There's quite a lot of reference tracks that don't make a lot of sense altogether in a playlist, but I feel like they make sense in this album. But we have Joni Mitchell River piano floating through the album, like this sort of trickly waterfall. I'm doing wiggly fingers for those that can't see my hand. and yeah. Sundown. This song's about yearning. I feel like there's three modes in the album. We've got grieving, yearning, and pining.
Mm.
I've got a whole essay. It's not an essay. It's just a ramble download of content on my Substack. If you want to get into the weeds about grieving, yearning, and pining, I made a Venn diagram, which I feel like could go well on a tote bag one day. So watch out for that. But I wanted to make a song that felt kind of nostalgic for a time that you never lived in. But then a feeling that is common, which is kind of not wanting to go, but having to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the song.
Sundown becomes me, incandescent and fumbly. Would you call me your darling, just for one evening? I am draped in mid-century in the Radio National. Forget heavy tendencies.
Okay, woman, picture yourself like on the floor, cross-legged. Maybe not yourself. Maybe you have to picture me because it changes everything. Changes everything.
Okay.
Okay. Picture me on the floor cross-legged, and then maybe Arahi's like in the corner somewhere just playing congas, just having a good time, vibing out. And then I realize that I've got to do a guitar solo, but I'm not very good at it, so I just toot away at the harmonica. So that's my harmonica debut. And then all of a sudden we're joined by angels, and they just sing along with me up in the sky. And that's sonically the environment where woman lives. But I wrote the song because I realized that my internal monologue's quite mean to me. Like, it's not the kindest person in there. And I kind of had to understand where that voice came from. And I had to give it almost a personality outside of myself so I could find empathy for that. Because I think that's an easy way to approach that if you inherently care about what other people think. If you give the voice in your head that's nasty a history that isn't yours, might be based on yours, but isn't yours, then it's kind of a nice way in. And then you learn to accept and love that person and carry on. And then later, I always knew I was quite gay, but I mean, I was married to a man and I have two children with him, so there's a whole thing. But later I fell in love with a train driver, and she's a beautiful woman, and she is in the corner of my mind. And so it's this funny little self-fulfilling prophecy that I didn't know what I was writing about at the time. And now I hear it and I'm like, this is the gayest little anthem. What am I talking about? So yeah, it's a fun fact. Another thing I don't know how to talk about on stage, it's kind of unclear sometimes.
That's what the song's for.
That's what the song's for. So I hope you like it.
Tell me how to sit with this feeling. Throw me a line so I can get real in. There's a woman in the corner of my mind. There's a woman in the corner of my mind. Throw me a stone, I'm building glass houses. I need to be alone still. See through my power. There's a woman in the corner of my mind. There's a woman in the corner of my mind. She is taking up all of my time. She is taking up all of my time. Child speaking inside voices. Time is the artist crafting our choices. There's a woman in the corner of my mind. There's a woman in the corner of my mind. She is taking up all of my time. She is
Plan is This cruisy little number kind of sprinkles its way through to the end of the album. When you play music that you write, I get told all the time, play me something we all know. This is kind of just me saying, I can't do that. It doesn't bring me as much joy as doing this. And that's what this song's about. It's got some really cool additions. So Dan, who did the mixing, he's in Australia. And sometimes he'd send things back and he's just played on the song. Actually, I think every single one of these songs has a special secret sauce Dan edition. He's gone rogue. And sometimes he went too rogue and I'd be like, okay, mate, that's enough. But usually I'd send him a picture and a haiku or a couple little, like, a little bit of feedback. Not like turn down the 250 hertz here, like something esoteric. And he'd go, oh, yeah, right. And then come back with exactly what I had in mind. Yeah, so amazing. And so this one feels really special because I didn't think the song was finished. I wasn't going to put it on the record and it came back from Dan and I was like, he's nailed it. He's pulled it out of the oven and now I'm hungry. So yeah, I hope you like it. This is the last song on the album. If we're looking at the album as a meal, if we're going to carry that analogy, this is like when they offer you cheese and crackers after dinner. It's not quite dessert, but it's enough that means that you'll stay at the pub a little bit longer or something. There's actually a book called Every Time I Find the Meaning of Life, They Change It, and it is by Daniel Klein. Truth be told, I've never read it, but it has a picture of the dog on the front and it's red, and I saw that picture and I wanted to read it, but I didn't. So instead, I wrote this song, which is kind of like the conclusion of, you know, where I've landed. If Cacophony is the thesis of the album, this song is kind of what finishes it off.
It's your findings.
It's my findings, yeah. It all sits under the umbrella of change is a slow-moving beast, and you're ever evolving, and the more you know that you don't know. And It'll change. It's ever-changing. And fun fact as well, this is when we bring back in the voice notes and the funny little things. I recorded the produce fridge at Foursquare Matakana, and I think it's the best produce fridge in the country. Not in terms of content, but it's got like a couple little fans and whirring, and if you stand in the right spot, they kind of make a phaser sort of flangey. It's kind of fun. I zoned out there for completely sober, I would add. Like, this is just pure unadulterated joy for me, just zoning out in front of a produce fridge in a busy Foursquare on holiday season. And so that is the last thing you hear on the album. It's actually right the way through the track, but it's on the locked groove. So this is the last song on the vinyl. It's got a locked groove, and it will just hum away until you realize that it's just still happening and you have to turn it off. But yeah.
Fables, thank you very, very much for coming. Change is a Slow-Moving Beast, out now. Where can people find it?
It's out now on all of the streaming places. We've got some videos on YouTube that I think if you enjoy the whole sensory experience, that I enjoyed the process of making the videos. And of course, if you want to hold it in your hands, you can buy it in all good record stores or off my Bandcamp.
Thank you very much. This has been Long Player with Fables. The album is Change is a Slow Moving Beast, out now.
Long Player. Thanks NZ On Air Music.